high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Brett Baer is queued up. Mark Inglerish is also helping us out. Helping us out, criminal defense attorney, make heads or tails of what's going on with Trump. And I'm not just talking about the document. I'm not just talking about the case downtown. I'm also talking about the documents case. Also, keep in mind, we're following some alert that's going on right now in downtown Washington at the RNC headquarters, trying to find out what the alert is, but people are keeping an eye on trying to find out, get to the bottom of that. So before we get to Brett, let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
I am focused on achieving needed outcomes, and this legislation is a needed outcome, and I'm not going to lose hope, nor am I going to stop advocating for it.
I just don't believe a word he says ever. Senator Schumer now wants to control our southern border. Really? And wants to resurrect a rejected Senate bill to do it. Knows he doesn't have the votes. How Mayorkas is asking for more time to fix the border that he busted.
Number two.
And then the judge did something I have never seen in my 60 years of practicing law all over the world. He said to this key witness, I'm going to strike your testimony and not allow you to testify if you ever look at me again that way.
It's thuggish. That's where this judge is. Trump trials, closing arguments on Tuesday in the Trump Bragg case in New York City. Key, the jury instructions on this murky, unwieldy, badly flawed prosecution. While new revelations emerge from Mar-a-Lago, the raid there is only going to deepen the rift between Trump and the FBI.
Number one.
Reading a 20-minute speech should be the easy part. And the fact that we have 9 gaffes in that amount of time, that is a pretty terrible ratio. And I've got to think we're seeing from the left an effort to sort of change the narrative.
It's not possible. That's Lydia Moynihan of The New York Post. 2024, gaffe-prone Joe Biden gets embarrassing corrections from his own staff after his last major speech while buying votes with student loans and trying to hold down rising gas prices while emptying our strategic oil reserve. It makes no sense. While Trump targets very blue regions like the Bronx, New York, New Hampshire, the state, Minnesota, and Virginia. Let's bring in Brett Baer. Brett, first off, RNC headquarters now in lockdown in where you are in Washington. You have no sense of what's happening there, do you?
There's an evacuation, suspicious package, it appears. We're told hazmat on the way. Don't know yet. It's early. Just started happening about 20 minutes ago.
All right. First off, I want to just bring you to the corrections from the President Biden's speech from his own staff. Here's a listen, and I'll just define it further, of some of the mistakes the president made last weekend. Cut one.
And when I was vice president, things were kind of bad during the pandemic. I'm humbled to receive this organization. It truly inspires me. Saving millions of families, $800,000 in premium, $8,000 a year in premium. We're cracking down on corporate landlords who keep rents down.
Yeah, we don't know what 800 was the right number. You weren't vice president during the pandemic. That was during the crash of 08, I guess he was referring to. It wasn't the NAAC. It was the NAACP. He was not usurping. He was inspiring. It wasn't blood. President Trump didn't say bloodshed. He promised bloodshed. He said it was a bloodbath. So insurrectionists, and he said erectionists instead of insurrectionists. So interesting turn of phrase there. How weird is it to see 9 corrections from your own people?
Well, I think it's telling in that, you know, remember, this has been happening all along. Now, it's been happening in greater numbers in recent weeks. But I think it's telling that they decided to put out the corrections. They hadn't done that before. I mean, it's secretly been, you know, massaged on the transcript. This is a full-on, this is what was wrong. And, of course, you know, his critics are going to pick that up. It's just that it happens a lot, and this is the first time that we've seen this kind of list.
And so far,
I think the biggest one was obviously the American hostage being at the White House. He said, you know, he's here, and then, no, he's actually being held hostage by Hamas.
Oh, yeah, I should have brought that up first. That is horrendous. But we talk about something else he's doing. He's worried about the black vote. That's why he spent the last 4 days blitzing Black America. And now he's also worried about the young vote. That's why he was proud to announce hours ago another forgiveness, more loan forgiveness to the tune of over $7.7 billion. So an additional $7.7 billion. This is unbelievable that the Supreme Court said he couldn't do it. He's finding a way around it. It seems to be, to me, buying votes.
Listen, $7.7 billion in addition to the other money. So a total now is $167 billion in student loan relief. That is the amount of the U.S. Army budget. So essentially he's funding two U.S. armies with this student loan bailout. Now, how does that play with construction workers and union workers and guys that spent their whole life just digging out trying to pay off their student loans? I don't know. How does it play with, you know, suburban folks who, you know, maybe are successful now but really had a hard time until they paid off their student loans? I'm not sure. But $167 billion is a large number.
I'll tell you what, I'll bet another category. What about people who go out of their way to say, I'm not going to saddle my kid with debt? They'll pick the college they want, but I'll find a way to pay it off without getting any student loans. And they sit there and say, I feel like a sucker. I actually found a way to pay for this, and I just got it forgiven. The one way that I think the country could rally around is if you cut rates. Let's say you just went from that 7% rate to, you know what, there's below prime student loans that we're going to offer people, and we're going to start with people over the last 10 years that took them out. So this way we're lessening the payments. Keep in mind, Brett, as you know, during the pandemic, no one paid their loans. So they already got their respite.
Exactly. And of course, that's a, you know, that would be a great thing to do because it would be a little bit more fair. This feels like it's unfair unless you're on the back end of the receiving end of the wiping out the loans. Now, you know, it's clear that this is, we're heading towards an election, and this is one of the things that he's doing. And, you know, the Supreme Court essentially said you couldn't do it, and he found a way to make it happen.
Brett Baer, our guest, we're trying to make heads or tails of what's going on in 2024. Before we get to the court case, I think it's going to be great. I would encourage President Biden, go to Oklahoma, go to Nebraska, go to Wyoming, and go ahead. Go tell people why you'd be a better pick, even if you know you can't win that state. And Donald Trump is now going to do something he promised. He's going to have a rally tomorrow in the Bronx, I think at 1 o'clock. So this is something everyone said, you know, he'll never do. He's never going to win the Bronx. I think he got 12% of the vote there. You know, Lee Zeldin, I think, got most, I think 27% maybe, if that, or 17%. I forgot what it was, of the New York City vote. How unique is it going to be to see President Trump having a rally in a park in the Bronx?
Well, I think it's going to be really unique. And I think there have been people saying to him for a long time that he should, you know, go to different areas. 1 o'clock in the Bronx? Not sure, but he'll probably get a great crowd. And remember, I mean, people haven't campaigned there in a long time because it's a foregone conclusion that it goes one way. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch, and clearly it'll expand the map. You got other states. You have other states like Minnesota and Virginia that are single digits and closing in on being essentially tied. So the more you expand the map, the more it becomes tough to defend. And we are, you know, 5 months out.
Here's what AOC said. And I know you get up in the morning and you say, honey, quickly, tell me what AOC said yesterday before I start my day. So I'll make it easy for you. Here's cut nine.
How do you think he'll be received?
I mean, I'm not going to be surprised if he's going to bus in a lot of his pals from Long Island and Jersey and wherever. I hope they pay a nice, hefty congestion tax. I hope that they contribute to the revenues of New York City and fund our public schools through their tourism to the Bronx.
Right. She went on. Cut 10.
He's hosting a rally to try to con people and try to fleece them out of every dollar that they have to fund his own legal fees. And by the way, he's doing it in the South Bronx, not to make a point, but because he's got court. And the man practically has the legal version of an ankle bracelet around him, and he can't leave the five boroughs because he always has to be in court. And so it is truly an embarrassment to him And I am looking forward to the response of everyday Bronxites talking about how they feel about him coming to their backyard.
I've never heard the term Bronxites, but I guess we'll find out. I also worry about security. I mean, they are screaming at every Biden event, every Secretary of State Blinken, every time he has to go to a hearing on Capitol Hill. How could they possibly secure a public park?
Well, you know, the Secret Service is good at what they do, but you're right. It's a challenge. And, you know, it's interesting that she said that they're going to bus in all these people from all these other places. You know, I don't think they bussed in a lot of people in New Jersey to that rally there. And I think there might be a little surprise about how many people show up to listen.
I would do it nonstop, and I heard he's looking on Long Island right now on where the Islanders play, the UBS Arena, to possibly doing it there or where the Islanders used to play on Long Island. He's got a lot of support there. He has dreams of he doesn't understand why he doesn't win New York because he's a Queens guy. If I can, Brett, let's jog over to the courtroom now. How surprised are you? I thought last week we heard that the judge said, be ready for your final statements, your closing statements by Tuesday. That's yesterday. Now we hear, I mean, next Tuesday, the jury goes home, the subs, the alternate, as well as the starters, and they're going to go to barbecues, they're going to go to movie theaters, they're going to have private conversation, they're going to get text messages for the next 5 days. Who do you think it benefits?
The prosecution, 100%. I mean, the time, they're not sequestered, to your point. There's going to be a lot of pressure on these people from their friends. And maybe specifically one kind of friend, you know, if there are people that are really adamant that that Donald Trump shouldn't be president, you know, those people are going to come under pressure. And that's one of the reasons you sequester a jury. But they're not. I don't get it. I've talked to a number of legal experts. There's no reason why the closing arguments couldn't have started yesterday. And the jury get the case today. If they had to deliberate over the weekend, that's another thing. But, you know, they could have come back with a decision by Friday.
Because they could have had closing statements yesterday. How I hear that legal experts tell me and you that it's all going to be about what they could get the judge to agree to in terms of jury instruction, that they want to make it clear, for example, that Michael Cohen's fact that he was convicted on indiscretion, that violation. That doesn't mean that Donald Trump should be convicted of that. It has nothing to do with him. So the prosecution also wants their wish list. When are we going to find out what the jury's going to be told?
I think once you get back from this weekend, I think before closing arguments, they'll probably have the jury instructions. But the judge is contemplating that. He's also, you know, he's severely limited what Brad Smith, the FEC expert, was going to testify to the point where he just didn't get called. And, you know, I think this all factors in. How he tells the jury what they have to do is the biggest part of this case.
So far, the fact that Bob Costello won on the stand created the greatest controversy because he was looking sideways. Because he made a verbal guffaw, because he kept having the objections from the prosecution sustained. That seems to be an exchange that almost every legal expert we have cannot understand.
Yeah, I mean, listen to the Trey Gowdy and others who were in the courtroom. They didn't really get the judge's reaction to a lot of that. He obviously controls the court, and maybe, you know, in retrospect, that was probably the wrong call. I mean, they could have ended without Costello, and the fact that they felt that they needed him for this kill shot is interesting too. But it doesn't take away from the fact that Michael Cohen's testimony revealed that he stole tens of thousands of dollars from the Trump Organization on the stand. I mean, in closing, that's kind of the lead.
Gotcha. Hey, Brett, thanks so much. We'll see you tonight. Anything you want to promote tonight at 6?
We're going to continue to follow this Mar-a-Lago case and what exactly is coming out of these documents. And, you know, FBI is saying it's standard operating procedure. But, you know, you're dealing with a former president who has Secret Service. So the whole thing's bizarre. We also have an interesting story coming out of North Carolina about some suspicious activity that we're going to develop today and break on the show.
Well, that's fantastic. Brett Baer, see you tonight in Special Report.
We'll see you.
All right, 1-866-408-7669. I'll get to those in just a moment. And when we talk about that Mar-a-Lago case, when we come back, what was said in those documents that kind of telegraphed the controversy that they'd have to undergo, being that they were going to actually go ahead and do this raid on a former president's mansion. Do not miss the next minutes of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. From the Fox News Podcasts Network, stay on top of the latest news and information from Fox News. Listen and download the Fox News Hourly Update on your time. The trending stories you need anytime you want it. Listen and download now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Out of the gates and ready to go. Hey, it's Hutton Withrow. Hot Mike is here on the Outkick Network. We've got your afternoon covered with the latest sports discussion, and it's available wherever you find your audio.
Daily analysis and news. He is hot. I am Mike. Actually, my name is Chad. His name is Jonathan. But you get the picture. We're going to bring it every single day. Whatever you want to call us, we'll respond to. We just want you to respond to what we're dishing out every day.
And while you're here, we hope you're subscribed to the podcast. Like, subscribe, and share.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We're back, everybody. We went a little long with Brett because there's so much going on. We're still trying to follow this story. And a lot of times it's no problem, but we do have to follow it. An evacuation order in front of the headquarters in Washington, D.C. of the RNC. We don't know what's going on. We know that my last 15 minutes on Fox and Friends, that was the story. We read it 5 minutes later thinking this is going to be over and done. It's not done. So we'll follow up on that. And coming up next, we're going to go inside these court cases with Mark Iglarch, and he's a criminal defense attorney. You've seen him on Fox a lot. We're also going to have a chance to take a look at Anthony Blinken's testimony in front of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee yesterday. It's just so aggravating to see him in a calm, cool lead guitar, rhythm guitarist fashion, just defend his relations with Israel. It's all about politics. He says, we're ironclad. We gave him a lot of weapons. But now, when you need him most, what are you doing? You're playing General Blinken. You're telling him, don't go into this city. Don't use this bomb. We're not going to give you that much. And this is how you'll do it. That is not the way you run it. You're lengthening this conversation. This is what Donald Trump said instinctively. Israel needs to get this over with now. He didn't say hold back. He didn't say watch out. He says they need to get this done. The longer it lingers on, the more public sentiment you lose. And that's the case. I was also sad to say Ireland, Norway, and Sweden recognize the nation of Palestine. Really? They said they're going to try for a two-state solution. That'll help it. Have you been paying attention? Have they tried how many times? 12, 13 separate times with a two-state solution? Careers have been ruined. Like Ehud Barak, because they signed off on it and the Palestinian Authority wouldn't. And now you have Hamas, who's not even interested in it. So Ireland, you go and embarrass yourselves with your liberal government, and you recognize it along with Norway and Sweden. Please, get a practical look, get involved, roll up your sleeves. Sweden's got this rich history of fantastic diplomatic relations, especially on our behalf with countries we don't recognize. Go get involved instead of sitting on the outside and saying, yeah, let's go for a two-state solution. If it was indeed possible... But would you put a terrorist nation right next to you? The answer is no. Not one nation would, but you want Israel to do that. Makes no sense. Brian Kilmeade Show.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I personally approve the decision to seek a search warrant in this matter. Second, the department does not take such a decision lightly. Where possible, it is standard practice to seek less intrusive means as an alternative to a search and to narrowly scope any search that is undertaken.
And that is Merrick Garland reviewing the fact that there was a raid on Mar-a-Lago almost 2 years ago now that gave us the documents case and Jack Smith and his bulldog face and approach to all these things. And now we understand that one of the things that stands out about this that we're now finding out is the FBI had authorization to use lethal force. Really? Lethal force on Mar-a-Lago resort club of 56 rooms? Were they expecting to see the former president there? And then when we asked the FBI, 6 hours later, they came out and said, first they said, we're not commenting. And then they said, well, that's just standard in the paperwork. Mark Iglars joins us now, criminal defense attorney. Mark, from what you know about this new development, and you might not think it's a big deal. Do you think it's a big deal?
Can you repeat the development? Sorry.
No problem. The developments are this. The FBI was authorized in their raid on Mar-a-Lago. They were dressed in plain clothes, polo shirts, but they also had authorization to use lethal force. And we're wondering where that came from. 6 hours after we requested to find out why the FBI in paperwork that was just unearthed for this case, why the FBI would need lethal force, they said after 6 hours, they came back and said, well, it's standard. How do you feel about that? Do you think there's a lot of there?
Yeah, no, I would think that if they reasonably fear death or great bodily harm, they can always use lethal force. They don't need anybody's special okay on that. You go into a place, it's very dangerous when you're executing any kind of warrant, as we saw in the P. Diddy case, you know. That seems weird that that's even a discussion.
Yeah, it's out there. And it just goes to show you, too, there was some internal discussion in this paperwork that if we went ahead with this raid and this communication, the relations between the FBI and Donald Trump, the former president, is bad already. This will make it worse. And the other guy fired back saying, I don't care about the effing optics, obviously. But you would think in the big picture, a former president raiding his house over documents you're already talking to him about, some of them, most of which you've got back already, seems to be an overreach, although that horse has left the barn.
That's how they do it, man. That's how they do it. They'd rather go way over the top, and it doesn't matter who you are. That's pretty normal.
So if you get the FBI involved, even on a documents case?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
There is somebody. It's not a documents case. It's a going into a place potentially where there could be harm, and they need to protect themselves. I'm okay with that.
All right. Do you see you need to put that in writing or you don't?
No. They need someone's permission to pull the trigger if somebody's pointing a gun at them and they fear death or great bodily harm. No, they pull the trigger. That's what they do.
All right. So let's talk about this case right now. Are you surprised we're waiting until Tuesday to have the closing arguments?
Yes. I still don't understand exactly. Did you know the reason? No one's told me. Do you know why?
No idea.
I cannot believe no one knows. I thought everybody knows, and they just hadn't trickled down to me. But that does seem really weird. I'll tell you who it benefits, though, the defense. You know, the more distance you can put between the time that a witness testifies and when attorneys are arguing what those witnesses said is better for the defense. They're like, wait, I thought the witness said this, but now the defense attorney is telling me this. Okay, it's harder for them to recollect the testimony that took place weeks ago.
Here's my concern. Most of the people in this area did not vote for Donald Trump. You would assume most did not vote for Donald Trump. They were on the jury, especially the speed in which they were selected. And then you wonder if they go home to their barbecues, hangs out with their friends, they head to the movies, they get their text messages, they read the news, they watch the news. Even though they're not supposed to, it's impossible to miss it entirely. Everybody in your circle knows. How are you going to feel pressure to do something that they might have felt isolated enough not to do? That's my worry if I'm Trump.
That is fair. Anybody who says otherwise is being intellectually dishonest. These are not robots. They're human beings, and they do talk about the case even though they're told not to. And people will come up to them and say, oh, how's it going? You're going to fry him, huh? Or they're going to say, not much of a case here, depending upon which network they're watching, you know? I've seen nothing but overwhelming support for the defense team in this case and how the prosecution lacks merit with this prosecution. So I think it kind of benefits the defense, by them being having access to their friends and family who are hopefully watching the same thing.
So, Mark, I don't know how many times or if at all you were able to get into the courtroom, but Alan Dershowitz was there. He wanted to see the behavior of the jury and the judge. And this is what he said. Cut 23.
The basic problem this judge made is that he expanded the prosecution's right to provide irrelevant evidence on the prosecution, evidence about how the sex allegedly was conducted with Stormy Daniels, utterly irrelevant. He admitted in the end it was irrelevant. But then when it came to relevant testimony, he totally cut the legs out from under the defense. They should definitely have allowed fully for the expert witnesses to contradict what the prosecution had said about these being illegal campaign contributions.
He's talking about Bob Costello, who came out and said what he, what Michael Cohen said to him is that he had right. nothing on Trump.
All right, I agree with a lot of what he's saying, but I put fault on the defense, as the judge did, for opening up the door. First, let me explain what I mean. He said the reason why I let in all those details about what happened with Stormy Daniels is because the defense challenged it in opening statements, said it didn't happen. I still don't think that anyone needs to know in a fraud trial that the former leader of the free world was in boxers in a, you know, posing position on a bed about to commit an extramarital affair, and whether he wore a condom. That, none of that should come in ever. Now, that said, some of those things weren't objected to by the defense, number one, so I don't understand what they were doing. And number two, I still don't think that you say in opening statement, this affair didn't happen, because you know you're going to open up the door to Stormy Daniels getting into all those details. What I would have done is, this is not a case about whether that happened or not. This is a case about, and just move on. I mean, obviously you'd love to be able to say it didn't happen, but it's not going to affect him politically. So why allow all that to come into this case?
And once it got out there, it's out there, and then people have to be now dissuaded to let them know, hey, you know what, it has nothing to do with this case, and why were they learning it? Evidently, yeah. they were pretty engrossed when he was talking, Bob Costello, according to people staring at the jury throughout the case. So in jury instructions, what would you be pushing for the defense make sure is in there?
Willingly. It was willful, constant language indicating that this is not a civil case. Yeah, you should have known what Cohen was doing. It is you did. You were in the weeds. You know precisely. To make this a criminal case, you must know exactly what's going on, have the intent to commit fraud. So I would put all that language in there. Also, I'd like to know – I still don't know. I've been practicing 32 years. I don't know what election interference is. Assuming they're still going with that as the main crime, what does that mean? What's the difference between interference and influence? What words are you going to be able to come up with that make the jurors clear on what makes it a crime? I don't know how you do that. I don't know how we're ever in a trial at this late juncture where we still don't even know what that is. That's never happened to me. I've tried over 150 cases. I know precisely where the case is headed and what the language is going to be.
But the fact is, if he says, hey, I have an election, and I got to put my personal life. I do not want my family coming out with this story. I definitely want to keep this story down. And he ends up writing the check after he became president. Mm-hmm. Then it's no problem writing that check to Stormy Daniels, right?
Nothing wrong with that. Happens all the time. Yeah.
So you have Bob Costello saying the only thing he was talking about was his family. And then you have his Madeleine Westerbrook, who was his assistant at the White House, saying how that was really his priority. He used to wave to Melania before he left on Marine One every single time. He'd like to see her at the window. And he talked right. about that. And he had other people say that, Hope Hicks, too. Yeah. So there's a reason to give you some doubt, despite what Cohen said.
Yes, it's called a reasonable hypothesis of innocence, which is why I did not believe they needed to call Abbott and Costello to the stand. You don't do it. You rest your case because the state didn't prove the charges. By calling two witnesses, now jurors, even though they're supposed to only look to the state for the burden of proof, they look over, they go, well, they called 20 witnesses. Those guys only called two witnesses. They start comparing it. I get up right after the state rests their case, and I jump to my feet and say, the defense rests. And then I remind jurors that you all promised me that if the state rested their case, you would hold them to the highest burden and you'd find my client not guilty and not turn to the defense to prove anything. We didn't prove anything. We didn't need to do it on our case because they didn't meet their burden. And now you lose that. You put Costello up there, who took one step forward, two steps back. You didn't need to call him. His ego wasn't his amigo. You don't need to call that guy.
But here's the thing, though. You think you've proven your case. You think you defended your client. But if you look over and are not sure, and you have a guy sitting there in the bullpen or in the on-deck circle that says,
not
I will tell
Costello.
You for sure.
No.
You
not
know
Costello.
Him?
No, but I know I saw him testify on air before. I have a gut feeling as a lawyer. This guy comes with baggage. He's not going to come across clean, clean, clean. You're not going to get what you want. It's not like you got Sister Mary, you know, who's beyond reproach with no baggage. Then you take the risk and you call that witness and you let jurors like kind of go, well, the defense now called somebody, you know, why didn't they call other people? The reason why is we didn't call anyone. The Constitution doesn't require us to call anyone. You just don't do it. I'm telling you, man, you don't do it. It's rookie lawyering, or you do genuinely have concerns that the jurors might have bought Cohen's testimony, in which case you're in a lot of trouble.
Right. But then if the jurors did buy that Cohen was telling the truth, is that what you mean?
Yeah. Costello ain't going to be the guy who's then going to go, oh, okay. Well, now disregard everything that you heard about. I think it was reasonably foreseeable that he was going to perform the way that he did. And worse, before the judge sent the jury out, you know that they got a sense that judge didn't care for this witness. Okay? That had to have happened. You know, Costello's eyeballing him, and then the judge says, send the jury out, which was a good move because he could have chastised him in front of the jury. That would have been horrible. But you know then that this is just not the greatest witness. I would never have done it. It's just not worth it.
Well, number one, I actually feel differently. I have no idea what happened in the courtroom because I wasn't there. But evidently, he was trying to finish a sentence, and he doesn't believe the judge is sustaining and stopping him from finishing that sentence was right. So at one point, he said, geez, which I think anyone would say after a while when you get interrupted.
You don't do that, Brian. Brian, come on. Geez, you're going to say that in front of a judge? Come on. And he's a lawyer. Come on, will you? Judge is going to go, oh, that's acceptable behavior from a witness. You don't say geez to a judge in a courtroom when your credibility's on the line. You want to be believed in front of a jury. How is that going to be positive?
You can't act like a human being in front of a judge. You got interrupted five times.
You mean be disrespectful in a court of law? Yeah, geez is acceptable for you and me if you interrupt me and I go, you know, I used to say geez all the time when Nancy Grace would interrupt me. Geez, you're like, well, come on, stop interrupting me. But that's not a court of law. That guy wearing the black polyester who's elevated, you don't disrespect him, especially when he's got the power to make you look bad in front of a jury. So, no, I'm not calling anybody on the defense side who in any way would say geez under his voice and possibly alienate himself in front of that jury. It's reasonably foreseeable that he would say geez in open court like that. And
see,
that's
the only,
not a witness I'm calling.
After having him on the show and then watching him on other shows, the only thing that was negative is the Rudy Giuliani stuff, the backdoor. Now you got to talk about backdoor access to Trump and what you were doing, and he didn't pay his bills, and you're suing Julie. That's the stuff that I would have kept him from. But in terms of what he had to say, it is so overwhelmingly expulgatory for Trump. I thought, how do you stop?
Because when someone has baggage like that, it then raises a reasonable doubt as to whether they're telling the truth on this other stuff that you think is so fabulous and can exculpate your client. You don't do it. It at a minimum, it neutralizes it, you know. At worst, you know, it comes across like the defense is desperate and this is the only witness they can come up with. And why are they only calling two witnesses? And no. I'm telling you, it takes strength and experience to get up there and not call a single witness. But then you have the argument, the power of that argument. Say, you all promised me you would never look to the defense to prove anything after the state rested their case and they didn't prove this. They didn't prove it. You cannot rely upon Michael Cohen. If your doctor told you needed brain surgery and that doctor was as credible and made you feel like Cohen did, Would you want a second opinion?
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, Mark.
Then that's reasonable doubt.
Yeah, we're about to find out. We've got to wait till next Tuesday to have closing arguments, and then maybe by next weekend we are going to have a verdict. Meanwhile, tomorrow the president's going to be in the Bronx. Mark, thank you.
Take care. Thanks.
All right, when we come back, I'll try to squeeze in some calls. Also, an announcement. Brian Kilmeade, Joe. Don't move.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Does Israel have to go into Gaza or into Rafah? Is this a requirement for victory?
Tony, absolutely, because Hamas is still there. Hamas has the guns, and Hamas will just come back. So if you look really at the inclination to want a Palestinian state, to have a Palestinian state that coexists with Israel, who doesn't want that? We want that, right, for the Palestinian people. But the main obstacle to that is Hamas, an organization that took over and has been stayed in power through force since 2005 and doesn't let any kind of opposition emerge. I mean, who's going to be the mayor of Gaza?
Yeah.
Nobody, because they're going to get a bullet in the head from Hamas from day one.
Right. So right now, if Hamas exists, they'll be running the place. If they survive, they win. So the IDF evidently has got their handfuls over there. They made some mistakes. A lot of their casualties have happened on friendly fire because of the coordination and because they have 2 year stints. But not everybody's as experienced as a standing army. So they have to be able to go into these cities with impunity, but they got to do it quick because we keep holding them back. That's what's hurting. And that's what H.R. McMaster, the general that's done so many great things in Iraq and Afghanistan and for a period of time with Donald Trump, he talked about that. And that's why you cannot hold back in going quickly with massive numbers into these areas. Instead, the Secretary of State is worried about Joe Biden's reelection effort with what the rest of the world thinks. And by the way, go to BrianKilmeade.com, and that's what I do, because I want to find out where I'll be. I need to know my schedule. And the next time we're doing a live stage show, which is more fun than you can imagine, is going to be June 29th in Indianapolis, Indiana. Go to BrianKilmeade.com at Shelton Auditorium. The next month, July 27th, Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania, History, Liberty, and Laughs Tour. We bring great moments in history to life, and I go over everything through my five history books.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
I wouldn't say never killing division. Maybe I shouldn't do a disclaimer on my slogan, though, right, Allison? That's not really a good sign. But I would say I try not to sow division. I actually wouldn't know how to sow division. Kennedy's here. She's so important, there's nobody else.
I'm reaping division.
Right. Thank you. Reaping a verb, which I don't often. Not many people reap, except for the
There's
group.
Not enough reaping.
Right. And you've said that before, but not on mic. So Kennedy's going to be here, too.
Thank you for letting me go on the record with that, Brian.
Thank you. Yeah. I mean, you want to follow that on your podcast later?
I do.
Right.
Like the meaning of reaping in modern society.
Right. Because most people think of reaping reaper.
They
first
do.
First name Grimm.
Yeah.
Right. That's ugly. We're following a bunch of things now.
He hangs out with Nancy Pelosi. He's just sort of
just like any minute
off
now.
To the side.
Absolutely. And if anybody gets in the way, Paul, sometimes you might have to pay the price.
Yeah. Sorry, Paul.
So a couple of things. There's a trial going on right now, and it's nothing to do with Donald Trump. Do you believe it? They're not blaming him for the fact that Graceland might have to change hands because Lisa Marie's not good with money. And it turns out the fortune of Elvis Presley was left in the conservatorship for Priscilla to take care of until Lisa Marie turned 18. She married Nicolas Cage and then Michael Jackson or in some type of order and it's had
and
a
Danny
lot of money.
Keough as well.
Who's that? Is
Danny
that the last
Keough.
One? That was the last one.
I don't know. There might have been another one because she had twins as well.
Yeah.
She had four children.
So whatever. She did not have a positive experience with drugs overall. So she was battling a bunch of things. In fact,
bariatric surgery.
She had that?
Yeah, that's what ultimately she had a small bowel obstruction from a previous bariatric surgery.
Wow. That's as bad as Joan Rivers dying from a facelift.
Yeah.
So here's the thing. Money's out. The great
Elvis's granddaughter.
Elvis's granddaughter is in charge, but there's no money there.
Yes.
But here's the thing. It's extremely profitable to go to Graceland.
It is. It's not cheap.
Yeah.
And then you got to pay extra to go to the little airplanes.
Right. What do you mean?
There's the airplanes there at Graceland.
Oh, across the street.
Yeah. So you can go. If you pay extra, you can tour Lisa Marie.
Across the street is much better.
Yeah.
Because they have all
the
pictures.
The Automotive Museum is amazing.
Yeah. And they got a whole music. Did you see the music part of it? Where you could almost play every album that he was on. And, of course, he's in a ton of movies. Mm-hmm. So the Across the Street is great. So this is a big success story. But the question is, did Lisa Marie sign it over to somebody that if she welched on any of her payments, they get...
Yeah, I hope not.
Graceland.
Yeah, so she might have defaulted, but, you know, her daughter is saying this was a forged document. The notary, apparently, who notarized the document said, I've never met Lisa Marie Presley.
Right.
And that's not my signature.
Other thing, just a quick note. If you're a notary, why do people always assume that you're not going to charge them? I feel like it's a skill that nobody expects to pay for.
Oh, no, you usually pay $8 in cash.
How about this? Ken, are you a notary? If your answer, you say yes.
No, but I would like to be a notary. My dad was a notary.
So, okay.
The pharmacist I go to is a notary. I had a document notarized the other day.
Your pharmacist is a notary?
Yes. They do passport photos.
Wait, you mean every pharmacist is a notary?
No, my pharmacist.
Oh, just has nothing to do with being a pharmacist.
No, it's one of those mom and pop pharmacies.
That
he
does
happens to be a notary.
Okay, because it's an interesting side job for extra money because no one wants to. If it's a friend of yours, is he charging you?
I don't think my dad ever charged me.
Right. Everyone's like, you're a notary, right? Can I come over?
Are you a notary?
No, but I know a notary.
Should we get notarized as notaries?
We should get notarized. I'd sign off on that.
Thank you.
And the thing is, if you are a notary, everyone I know that's a notary, outside you go to a formal business for it says Notaries R Us. Which has got this huge platform where they do deliveries. And
there are mobile notaries. I found this out. It's like $125.
All right.
Yes.
I've never paid for a notary because I always know someone in the notary business.
Interesting.
I don't even offer to pay. You think I should offer to pay?
Yeah. No, we're going like, where do we find a notary? And so we're looking it up like, well, if someone will come to you for $125. For $80, you go to the lobby of this woman's building. And I was like, that feels like I'm overpaying.
Right.
Pharmacist, $8. Cash.
Okay. How did we get off on that?
By the grace of God, Brian.
Right.
You know, it's like the Lord takes us in directions that people really need to interface with.
Right. Do you think the Lord's involved in my radio show? Probably.
Well, I think he used to be, and still you started sowing all that division.
Right. Well, the guy said I wasn't sowing that division.
Well, they say that now because they're trying to get you back in the good books.
So, and there's only one good book, correct?
Hallelujah.
Yes.
Although The Notebook was very good.
The Notebook. That was very good.
Yeah.
Is that a play, too?
Yes, it is right now. Very good, Brian. It's on Broadway.
Does the guy from the Rockford Files play the lead?
James Garner?
Yeah.
He sure does. He is the romantic lead. God rest his soul.
Oh. I remember the Rockford Files in repeats used to be followed by Cannon, the overweight inspector who smoked cigars and had a mustache, was not a model. And like, who sold that?
I mean, in this day and age with body positivity, I feel like anyone could be a model.
What do you mean about
that? I feel like if you're slovenly and you're covered in warts and carbuncles and you're bald, now it's like, no, that's attractive.
Right. Because we're in the politically correct society.
Yes,
where
that's
we can't
attractive.
Say,
no, smooth skin is gross. Mottled. Right. Sweaty skin is in. When I learned to drive, the first thing I wanted to learn how to do was pull the Rockford, which is doing a U-turn in reverse.
Wow. I didn't even know he did that.
Yeah. That was very important to me.
Is that the one? Did he live in a trailer?
He did.
He lived
in
a trailer.
Malibu.
Right.
Like, you can go to the spot.
And where he was.
Yes.
And he could afford something better, but chose not to.
Exactly right.
Right. It must be tempting to never clean up. Because no one has any expectations that they're visiting you in a trailer park.
I don't know if you could get a maid to visit a trailer.
It's the third one. It's rectangle.
They worry that they're never going to emerge.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, I would need an exit site. Like, what would be the emergency exit? I would ask that.
For the record, like, you're keeping this going, okay?
All right, we could move to this. All right. So, you know, I felt like you were keeping it going. All right.
It's your show.
Oh.
You're sowing division. That's what you're paid to do.
I'm not sowing division.
Oh, that's much better.
All right. So President of the United States made a few mistakes on Sunday. It's not me talking, Kennedy. It's not you talking. Mm-hmm. It is his people talking. Listen to some of these gaffes in Detroit, Michigan, as he tried to wow the people at the NAACP. Cut one.
And when I was vice president, things were kind of bad during the pandemic. I'm humbled to receive this organization.
Mike Pence?
It truly inspires me. Saving millions of families, $800,000 in premium, $8,000 a year in premium. We're cracking down on corporate landlords who keep rents down.
You better crack down on landlords and keep rents.
Yeah. We want those rents to be higher.
Do you want these people?
$800,000 a year in premiums is very reasonable.
Right, $800,000.
Yes.
So, by the way, upon listening to it, I think they're being way too harsh. I didn't see any problems with that. What about the fact is,
it's only getting better,
and I keep forgetting about this. He's addressing people at the White House for fighting anti-Semitism, and he's talking about a hostage that got out. Meanwhile, the hostage is still being held hostage in front of the family.
Yeah,
I mean, he's never clear on what he's doing. And that's the problem.
Also, there's not enough urgency with the hostages.
Oh, overall.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, well, how is that not the driving? Like, I felt like, you know, 10 years later, the hostages who were in Iran, like, we were still, like, real worried about them. You know, we're, what, 9 months in? No one's talking about it.
Right. They are. But the thing is, you can't say, don't go into Rafah. At the same time, don't go, you know, don't get the hostages back. Or get the hostages back.
Yeah, don't get the hostages back because you'll be committing genocide. And the International Criminal Court will issue a warrant for your arrest.
Thank you, Amal.
I'm writing about that today in the Daily Mail.
So Amal, isn't she Palestinian?
Shortly. Lebanese.
Similar.
Sure.
Right. So she knows the region and she blames the Palestinians. This is what I laugh at. Did you see the news that Spain?
I don't know that she's blaming the Palestinians.
Oh, yeah. She's blaming, I'm sorry, Israel.
She was asked
to be on the Olympics.
She is equivocating Benjamin Netanyahu with Hamas terrorists.
Yeah. There are three countries now that are recognizing a Palestinian state, which they say will help expedite the peace process. Have they seen Norway, Ireland, and Spain? Ireland, what a huge disappointment. Spain and Norway have all recognized a Palestinian state. By the way, who runs that state? Hamas. Do you recognize Hamas as a legitimate government? Okay, that's interesting.
Nancy Pelosi
okay,
does.
Yeah, fantastic. So you do. Where is that state?
No, she's so,
have
yeah,
you
so
seen
she
the 12
said that,
negotiations?
That Israel is a territory, but Palestine is a state.
She said that.
She said that.
I must have missed that. So Joe Biden makes those mistakes that he made. At the same time, he is clapping when the pro-Palestinian protesters stood up at Morehouse, and the valedictorian was giving speeches praising them and condemning Israel. He's trying to show that he supports them in doing so, but his support of Israel is ironclad. Really, as your Secretary of State says, don't go into Rafah. Well, excuse me, General. I mean, Mr. Secretary, what do you know about taking out Hamas?
The only thing he knows about taking out Hamas is that is his job right now, because he helped bury the laptop with 51 former intelligence officials colluding with then Twitter. That's right. What Antony Blinken did, and that's why he's Secretary of State. He got that job because he suppressed the laptop story. That's right. Why he's Secretary of State.
And you know who his best friend is? Hunter.
Yes.
Him and Hunter hang out all the time.
Yep. And they have for years. They've had a long-standing relationship.
He knew everybody, Hunter, and that's when Hunter came to see him, he had carte blanche to do whatever he wanted to do, including use his influence, possibly to influence American policy when his
dad
was vice president.
Antony Blinken is not a diplomat. This is why these filthy politics are unacceptable.
Right. So what do you think? Joe Biden is trailing everywhere except Wisconsin in battleground states, and now he's in a dead heat in New Hampshire, and the former president is going to go to the Bronx. You saw he was received by the construction workers. You saw how he was received by the bodega owners. You saw how he was received by the firefighters. Now he says, I'm just going to go to the Bronx in a park. I'm kind of worried about it, to be honest, because it's very hard to secure a public park. No offense to the Secret Service. And people are interrupting Joe Biden and Kamala Harris with his pro-Palestinian stance. Do they want to get a look at Donald Trump's policy? It's Israel, finish the job quickly.
Yeah, but it's interesting because that doesn't invite as much protest. even though it runs counter to what the protesters are claiming they want, which they're calling something genocide that is clearly not genocide. So if they're academics, if they're on these college campuses, why don't they acknowledge the Armenian genocide? I mean, that was an actual genocide that the United States of America won't say, oh, yeah, a million people slaughtered by Turkey. Yeah, that was genocide. That the Armenian genocide was genocide. What's happening now, that does not meet the definition. But they mark my words, what happens in Chicago with those protests, it's going to be a very, very tough city to keep safe. I'm much more worried about Chicago than I am a park
the DNC.
In the Bronx.
When the Democratic National Committee goes to Chicago, a place that they picked, they thought they were going to be welcome. Now, by the way, it's kind of odd to go to a place you don't have to convince to win. Obviously, he's got to feel good about Chicago and Illinois.
Illinois, like that's the weird, because people always, these conventions are always in purple cities and purple states, places that could go really either way.
Yeah.
You know, Milwaukee, that's where the RNC is, because they're doing what Hillary Clinton wouldn't in 2016. They're going to try and meet and convince undecided voters that they've got a better story to tell.
So Bill Maher, did you see him with Greg Gutfeld?
I didn't see him on Gutfeld, but I was very happy he was on Gutfeld. I know he's selling a book right now.
Yep.
And I know Kat has been on his podcast, but I saw him on The View.
And?
He was trying to convince Joy Behar that he and Joy Behar
should be an item.
They're probably humping right now, I'd like to think.
Can we say that?
I think
Allison?
We can.
Oh, we can. Good.
Yeah, yeah. Allison,
hey, when we come back, we'll play that cut. Not of, would you say?
Of them making body Congress?
No, body Congress. I believe it was a bipartisan meeting.
It'd be like sandpaper rubbing together.
In a way, sure, because they disagree on so much. we'll play that soundbite in just a moment.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And by the way, out there, that hat that you keep wearing, that red hat that says Make America Great Again, that tells people that you go along with this. So you might as well just put a swastika on the hat.
Don't do that.
Because we see it anyway.
Look, I'm not going to defend Donald Trump ever, but I would never say that we should put the swastika on the cap, because I think you can hate Donald Trump. You can't hate everybody who likes him. It's half the country. I don't want to live in that country. I don't want to live in the country where I hate half the country, and I don't hate half the country.
How dare you disagree with me?
So he pushed back on it. Here's more from her, Kennedy.
I'm nervous about saying anything against Biden, because I feel, you know, not that I have so much power, and you have some more than I do, obviously. But
I don't know about that.
Are you afraid that you might, you know, influence people who are on the fence?
I think you lose all credibility. I do. I mean, my bond with my audience has always been I don't pull a punch.
Yeah.
My bond with my audience is you're not going to like everything I say, but you know I'm saying what I really think is true.
So he's trying to give her a lesson. Did it work?
No, it didn't work, because she revealed her hand. Like, I'm not going to say anything bad about Biden because I hate Trump so much. But then they complained that there's so much hate and division in this country. But he said, like, the reason my audience trusts me is because I tell them what I truly believe. Mm-hmm. Like, this is how I see it, and this is the truth. And he said, sometimes they get mad at me and they don't agree with me, but they still respect me.
Right. That's why I think such a valuable voice. I saw a story of this over the weekend. I think more and more people go into the middle. Things have got so extreme that when people like Bill Maher are like a life preserver, that's why when people jumped on Jon Stewart for acting rational and saying everyone's being irrational about Trump, and you should not point out what's bad about Joe Biden. Why are you not seeing all the problems with Joe Biden? He's old. They killed Jon Stewart. They were killing Bill Maher. But if they fight their way through it, they would even be more famous.
And you know, he said to Joy Behar, you and I don't present as old. And he said, the president presents as old. He said, I saw his speech the other day, and he's like Dracula who's crossed oceans of time. And, you know, he's still here. And Joy's like, well, he may seem old, but he's got a good brain. He's smart. And he's like, he doesn't have a good brain. That's the
never
unfortunate
did, by the way.
Scary thing, but he's still got a lot of power. That's
right.
Terrifying.
So you don't even know who you're voting for yet, right?
No, I don't know yet.
Right. RFK, do you think that he should be on the debate stage?
I do, absolutely. I wish there were more voices on the debate stage. I think that is one of our big problems, is the Commission on Presidential Debates have kept this duopoly in place for too long, and we don't have enough rational voices challenging these major candidates.
So I saw Frank Farrenkopf, who runs those national debate, you know, that conference, that's being totally ignored by, guess who? Joe Biden. Joe Biden made this proposal behind the scenes to Trump, and he took it. Do you think Trump did a good thing in taking the deal that was handed to him?
Yeah, because Trump's whole thing is, I will debate you anywhere, anytime, as many debates as you want. And Biden's like, I'll give you two debates, not just one. It's like, well, you're supposed to give him three. Like, that's really what you're supposed to do. And if someone meets the threshold, the 5% threshold, they should be on the debate stage.
Perot was.
Or not 5%. It's higher than
it's
that.
It's a little higher, but you know, he gets 12 to 15%.
And it changed the outcome of the election.
Right. And by the way, 5%, 3% would change the outcome of the election in 2016. Can you imagine what all these other third parties will do? Kennedy, I enjoyed our time together. Where could we see you again?
I will be on Outnumbered and my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World, foxnewspodcast.com.
Thank you, Kennedy.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I think it's really important to recognize this is a false kind of moral equivalence here with the ICC between a state that's a democracy, that has a functioning judicial system, that can look into the excess deaths associated, civilian deaths, horrible deaths associated with the use of force in Gaza. But also, you know, you have a terrorist organization that conducted the October 7th attacks and deliberately targeted civilians. Mass murder, rape, infanticide, and still the hostages are still in Gaza. So I think it's a travesty, actually, to have these indictments at the same time. And, you know, from the perspective of Israel, I mean, this is a great reward for Hamas to suggest that equivalence, especially coming with the recognition that you mentioned of the three states that just said they're going to recognize the Palestinian state.
Yeah.
I mean, is October 7th going to be Independence Day for
So that is H.R. McMaster, a really smart guy, but very well respected in the military community still. Obviously a deep thinker. He's a great writer, but he's not a fiction guy. He's a fact writer about what he says, and he talks about the challenges. He goes to school on it as well as puts it on the camouflage and goes and fights for it. So being yesterday, I was at Camp Liberty, formerly Fort Liberty, formerly Fort Bragg, was Camp Bragg years ago. And just to see our fighting force, the U.S. Army, 87,000 people on campus, 23,000 family members, 57,000 fighters. And you get to hear what they're ready for and what the challenges they face. Well, I was talking to some military strategists. There's no doubt about it. Gaza is the toughest terrain. And the IDF does need some help in terms of intelligence. A lot of them just served their 2 years. They've said, go back on the uniform, but there needs to be more coordination. But the ICC coming out saying they're committing genocide. Amal Clooney, George Clooney's wife, being put on that ICC committee and saying, yeah, we agree unanimously they're committing genocide. Now, genocide was October 7th. Understand these are democracies. There's a reason why we didn't sign on to the ICC, and that's why Trump backed out. By the way, Anthony Blinken was asked about that yesterday when his testimony in front of Foreign Relations, where he got skewered for his foreign policy, offering condolences to the dead Iranian president. Why would you do that? The butcher of Iran, we're offering condolences for. Anthony Blinken was asked about this. Listen to what he said about possibly defunding the ICC. Cut 36.
Senator, I was in Israel 5 days after October 7th. I've been there 7 times since. No one, starting with President Biden, has done more to make sure they have what they need to defend themselves from Hamas, to deal with the threat poses.
With all due respect, that is ludicrous. That is ludicrous. Why have you cut off weapons to Israel then? This administration, you and President Biden, funded the October 7th attacks by flowing $100 billion to a homicidal, genocidal regime that funded those attacks.
That statement is profoundly wrong.
Why?
I'm not even going to humor it. I think it's a disgraceful statement.
Oh, you funded our enemies and you undermine our friends, and the world is much, much more dangerous as a result, and Americans are at greater jeopardy because of it.
Yeah, I don't want to play because it's too long, but later on, Lindsey Graham said Donald Trump defunded the ICC. being that you condemn their decision to say genocide should amount to the arrest of the defense minister Gallant and the secretary and the prime minister Benjamin Netanyahu says we'll reconsider defunding the ICC. Why do we need a world court? We got our own court. Understood? So that's what we're dealing with. Ted Cruz also confronted Blinken on a few other things on his foreign policy. Cut 35.
Mr. Secretary, you have presided over the worst foreign policy disaster of modern times. When Joe Biden became president, he inherited peace and prosperity in the world. We now have two simultaneous wars waging, the worst war in Europe since World War II and the worst war in the Middle East in 50 years. Both, I believe, were caused by this administration's consistent weakness. And indeed, your foreign policy is precisely backwards from what a rational American foreign policy should be. To our friends and allies, this administration has consistently undermined, weakened, and attacked them. And to our enemies, this administration has shown constant appeasement and indeed has flowed billions of dollars to the enemies of America who want to kill us.
So I can't dispute anything Senator Cruz has said. And what he's talking about is they don't say, here, Hamas, here's a check. They give it to the Palestinian Authority or the humanitarian aid groups who are in cahoots with Hamas. So they get it. Just like the aid that we're dropping off is not going all to Palestinians. In fact, a small fraction are. We have video of it. And then we find out 2 weeks ago we had Mrs. McCain, who's in charge of humanitarian distribution in the area, say Hamas is taking it and taking our stuff that we're giving and then selling it to the Palestinians if they have a dollar they can rub together in order to get it. So that's some of the bad foreign policy. I'll give you an example that I find unbelievably frustrating. Number one, you're going to support Ukraine. I think that's great. But what did you do before the invasion that you told everyone that was going to happen? What have you done since everything happened? Immediately, you thought Kyiv, your intelligence told you Kyiv was going to be overrun in 3 days. Now we are 2 years later. It's not close to being overrun. And now you say, here, now I'm going to give Ukrainians weapons, but I'm going to say you can't shoot it into a military base into Russia using our weapons. You could do that on your own, really? So there's limitations. You give me a TACMs to hit into Russia to blow up some of those rockets before they hit Ukraine. And you say, no, I want you to do that. I want you to escalate. When it comes to Israel, yeah, I'll give you what you need, except for don't go into the headquarters of Hamas. Because we're tired of the war and my popularity suffering. Can you possibly ever just do the right thing? Here's H.R. McMaster on what Russia is trying to do to Ukraine. Cut 41.
What the Russians are trying to do, and this is what many analysts have noted, is trying to divert Ukrainian forces away from the main Russian offensive operations north of Avdiivka. And this is that's having that effect. The Ukrainians are having to shift some forces. But I think it's very unlikely that the Russians will be able to achieve a breakthrough in either place. Putin has put more and more pressure on the Ukrainians right now, but at an extremely high cost, like 1,000 casualties a day. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that's sustainable. The Ukrainians, I believe, will be able to maintain this defense. And Kharkiv will not fall, I believe, because, these cities swallow armies. Hmm. And you're looking at maybe a 30,000 size force there in the north with maybe 10,000 more forming around north of the border in Russia.
Besides that, I don't really think he knows what he's talking about. I mean, that's what we're looking at. I was able to see one of those maps that tells you exactly in real time where all the conflicts are, who's fighting who. Because I was at that fort yesterday where General Keane once was, Iran, and now we're seeing many other fantastic war fighters and leaders who have 20 years of actual combat experience. That was just fascinating to see. They have an innovation center. So all they focus on, the smartest people in the Army, focus on how to make our weapons more lethal, how to adapt it to the battlefield. One statement was said to me, unattributed, but just know as a higher-up, said the biggest disaster for China was the Ukraine war. And I said, why? He said, because we're going to school on this stuff. They're seeing how Russia is gummed down there, how much money it is costing them, how many people they are leaving. And he believes that Taiwan is going to be easier to defend. They're better fighter, better financed, and it's an island. You can defend an island a lot easier. And he says he fully expects the U.S. would participate. And when that's clear, that'll probably back the Chinese off. That's why any candidate that gets your vote, you should demand that they expand the military-industrial complex that Eisenhower told us to look out for. Well, it shrunk to such a degree that it is not formidable enough for us, let alone the rest of the world. For example, one of the great things that happened with that $65 billion, I think 58 of it is going to us. We're giving the weapons that we have. We're coming back and keeping the modernizing weapons. I mean, we just came out with a brand new tank, a brand new a Bradley fighter, a people mover. Hendricks Motors, Motor Corp just came up with a new people mover that, you know, is designed to go with speed through all types of terrain and seats about 12. And you get the people from NASCAR engineering this, and they have an innovation division within the Army. That just works nonstop. And you got to see how smart these men and women are. I had a chance. That's where we did the radio show yesterday, from that building. And you just see what they're working on and going to school. And the fact that Patriot missile knocked out a hypersonic missile shocked everybody. That is a great learning tool now for our guys. The hypersonic missile was supposed to be able to grow up an aircraft carrier. Well, did they learn from what the Russians did with the hypersonics in order to defend our aircraft carrier, which is really a city on the move, on the water? This is some of the things I would want any candidate that's going to get your vote to explain how they're going to expand the industrial base, because we're now going against Russia, we're going against Iran, North Korea, and China until China wises up and realizes they're going to lose all their markets if they continue to do it. What bothered me, France again acquiescing, inviting Russia, Vladimir Putin, to celebrate D-Day in France. Really? You invite Vladimir Putin, who's about to steamroll Eastern Europe, reacquire the Soviet states, make them part of the Soviet Union, and you invite them? Crazy for me. When we come back, I'll give you the latest on what's going on the Trump trials. Also tell you about the what's happening over in Gaza, as we was just discussing, and more. Don't move. Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Think about the stakes of the Supreme Court. If Donald Trump wins, he will almost certainly get two more appointments. By the end of Trump's term, second term were he to win, Thomas will be 82, Alito will be 78.
They're definitely retiring.
They're definitely retiring.
If Trump wins again.
And it could be just KBJ, like holding down the fort.
And Justice Sotomayor will be 72 at the end of Trump's term. So he will definitely get two appointments. If he has two appointments, that means he will have appointed five Supreme Court justices, all of whom will be around or below the age of 60. When he leaves office, that is a court majority, a MAGA court majority that will rule for decades. We can win the next however many presidential elections, and absent something sort of extraordinary happening, Trump's fingerprints will be all over the Supreme Court. And so I think we should make this a big issue. And we know this works because in 2016, that vacant Justice Scalia seat that McConnell held open was one reason, and you heard this in a lot of focus groups and post-election surveys, that Republicans who did not like Trump at the last minute were willing to hold their nose and vote for Trump because they cared about the Supreme Court. So I think we can do that in reverse.
You can, but you're also going to alert the Republican side, too, that we're not going to let the Alito seat go. We're not going to let the Justice Thomas seat go, especially the way you've attacked it and vilified them and tried to marginalize them through vacations. Maybe Justice Thomas should have been more transparent about an upside down flag that Judge Alito's wife put up. So you're trying to desperate try to. Amy Coney Barrett's been attacked, too. We know Justice Kavanaugh. He has not had a day of peace since he got that robe. So that's all Democratic attacks. Do you want to lose that seat, Republicans? I would not doubt that Donald Trump tries to take advantage of that, too. So this is going to be interesting. That was Dan Pfeiffer, former Obamaite, talking about why they should be motivated on the Democratic side. Look, I don't care what anyone says. Think about last month. Donald Trump raised more money than Joe Biden. Think about this. You saw the polls and the Siena polls and the Fox polls. Joe Biden, it's not by much, but Donald Trump's winning. I don't really care that much about national polls. And then you see what's happening in places like New Hampshire. Then you see a 12-point lead in Nevada. You see a 12-point lead rough between 8 and 12 over in Arizona. Georgia seems almost out of reach right now for Biden. What he's going to focus on is Michigan. He thinks he can reverse that. He thinks he can hold Wisconsin. And he thinks he can convince people in Pennsylvania. So these are going to be tough. But, I mean, Trump might be able to win without them. But then Trump does interviews. And he's got to go ahead. And I keep using this analogy. And I'm not a golfer. But you don't try to hit the green off the tee if you don't have to. And he, President Trump, does not have to. Stay with your team. People know you. Spell out your agenda. But when it comes to abortion, you got to be careful. And if you have a program that you recommend outside 0 weeks, which won't fly for the country, even though most people listening right now want it, it won't help Donald Trump get back to the White House. Listen to these comments. Cut 14.
So related to this is the whole issue of contraceptives. Do you support any restrictions on a person's right to contraception?
Well, we're looking at that, and I'm going to have a policy on that very shortly. And I think it's something that you'll find interesting. And it's another issue that's very interesting. But you will find it, I think, very smart. I think it's a smart decision. But we'll be releasing it very soon.
Well, that suggests that you may want to support some restrictions, like the morning after pill or something.
We are also, you know, things really do have a lot to do with the states. And some states are going to have different policies than others. But I'm coming out within a week or so with a very comprehensive policy, which I'll get to you immediately.
Yeah, I mean, he did last time. He told everybody my big announcement is going to be bring it to the states. You know, Lindsey Graham got on the outs with President Trump by saying, why are you doing that? This is not going to wear well. He said, you should come out and just say 15 weeks. That's what Europe's at. Go do it. So then Donald Trump attacked Lindsey Graham, said, I should apologize to people of South Carolina. I never should have supported him for his reelection. So after putting that out and Democrats running with it, saying the president's going to restrict contraception, he said this on Truth Social. I have never and will never advocate imposing restrictions on birth control and other contraceptives. This is a Democratic fabricated lie, misinformation, disinformation, because they have nothing to run on except failure, poverty, and death. I don't think that's a great platform. Has that been used before, Allison? Was that Al Gore's slogan? Failure, poverty, and death?
Let me look that up.
Yeah, can you? Please do that. I know Joe Rogan has somebody, Jamie. He just looks up everything. Do you know what I'm talking about, Eric? Do you ever listen to Joe Rogan?
Jamie, pull that up.
Yeah, Jamie, pull that up. Next thing you know, he does. But you don't have any interest in doing something like that, right?
Well, here's the thing. We don't have the flashy video that he does. So when I pull it up, I can then share it for you in the audience. So if you're just relying on me, then just to say it in your ear or on the air.
So you want me to look smart?
Exactly.
Instead of Allison pull it up, you want whisper it in my ear, and it sounds like I've pulled it up.
Exactly. That's a good producer.
But you did. In fairness, you're the one who found the Dan Pfeiffer cut.
I thought it was an interesting take.
Yeah, and because there's a couple of things. What I was saying, too, is don't hit the green off the tee. So with the President of the United States, just make it just when it comes to contraceptives, of course, I don't have restrictions on contraceptives. We'll give a comprehensive statement next. And then when it comes to this post on Truth Social that uses the word Reich, R-E-I-C-H, that it's a Nazi reference. He liked the beginning of the ad. Someone put it on his account. He was in court. It couldn't have been him. And now it's causing a firestorm. He's saying, if you return me to power, it's going to be like the Third Reich. And he didn't say that. It was a reposting, so they took it down. But guess what? I look up today. Every time I looked up at the other morning shows, they were talking about Donald Trump with Nazi references,
yeah,
right?
Well, they're talking about that mainly, and then this. Also just saying, you know, again, because it really motivates the left, the abortion issue, and then now they're playing this contraception cut nonstop. They'll read the cut, but it's like, he's not even going to let you take birth control now.
But you know what the real story is?
What?
The forgiveness of more student loans.
Yes.
When you look at the total, it's more than the Defense Department. This is money that Barack Obama said, I'm taking all these student loans from the banks. We'll take them as a federal government. Why did that? He wanted more control. When he did that, because I remember the banks that I had, my student loans, no longer exist. I had Chemical Bank, and might have been Chase bought Chemical Bank. I don't even remember. But I had a student loan book. Every day I would rip a coupon. That's how you mailed it in back then. I mean, I'm not talking about, it's not stagecoach time. I'm not talking about turn of the century. Well, it's the previous century, just this one. But so those banks would not have allowed the government to come in and just forgive a loan. They go, you know, you're paying me. But now it just goes into the pile of debt. So that's huge news for 35-year-olds who made their payments, for parents that are so proud that their middle-class kids don't have any student debt. Now they feel like suckers. For people that jumped into a trade school or no school, they feel like idiots. $10,000 a year would have been, that's what they did. They learn a skill, they learn a trade, they become electricians, carpenters, whatever, they welders. So there's a huge downside to this. That's a policy. To drain the strategic oil reserve in order to get gas down for an election. That's a policy. A post on Truth Social that Trump didn't do is not a policy.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest minute to the Brian Kilmeade Show. I hope you had a great time. I'd like to thank everybody at Fort Liberty. It was so great to us. Allow us to see the latest Bradley, the latest tank that we have, the latest technology when it comes to drones, the best they could show us. The new gun that's going to be the new standard, which they say is better. I'm not a big gun guy. I'm not anti-gun, but I just didn't grow up in that culture. But in terms of the Army, they've never seen anything quite like it. The world has never seen anything quite like it. I had a chance to see it fly in the latest Black Hawk. And then fly around in the latest Apache. So everybody at Fort Liberty couldn't be better. And I'll tell you, America, you could not be in better hands. I felt like I was walking into a Division I locker room when I was dealing with these men and women. They're all in incredible shape, so motivated, great disposition, and great athletes. And they know exactly what they're doing on a daily basis. So before we go any further, and before Martha McCallum in 10 minutes, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
I am focused on achieving needed outcomes, and this legislation is a needed outcome, and I'm not going to lose hope, nor am I going to stop advocating for it.
Yep, that's Alejandro Mayorkas, an embarrassment to this country. Senator Schumer now wants to control our southern border. Really? And wants to resurrect a rejected Senate bill to do it. You mean the one that has no chance of passing? How Mayorkas is asking for more time to fix a border that he broke.
Number two.
And then the judge did something I have never seen in my 60 years of practicing law all over the world. He said to this key witness, I'm going to strike your testimony and not allow you to testify if you ever look at me again that way.
That is the Trump trials. Closing arguments on Tuesday in the Trump brag case in New York City. Key. The jury instructions on this murky, unwieldy, badly flawed prosecution that you see Alan Dershowitz is beside himself in witnessing, while new revelations emerge from the Mar-a-Lago raid that will only deepen the rift between Trump and the FBI.
Number one.
Reading a 20-minute speech should be the easy part. And the fact that we have 9 gaffes in that amount of time, that is a pretty terrible ratio. And I've got to think we're seeing from the left an effort to sort of change the narrative.
Lydia Moynihan of the New York Post talking about the Joe Biden gaffe-filled speech. So embarrassing. Now he's being corrected by his own staff. We'll play some of it, some of the corrections, and let you one make you come to one conclusion. This president is not up for the job. He never has been. Even when he was younger, he hasn't been good for the job. Now he's not up for the job. Now keep in mind, Donald Trump smells blood in the water. And don't take that wrong. It doesn't mean he's going to kill anybody. It means he's going to have a rally in the Bronx tomorrow. He thinks he can win New Hampshire in a dead heat in the latest poll. New Hampshire Journal. Minnesota was just there the other day in Virginia. So he wants to win by a lot, if I could quote him directly. So Joe Biden, by the way, Secretary of State Blinken is getting his head handed to him again on the horrible foreign policy that he represents and often leads. Jake Sullivan deserves a lot of the blame, and Joe Biden when he's asked to use his instincts. So we're going to play some of that shortly. But if you want to know a guy that's desperate, he wants to win back young voters, he's forgiving another $7.7 billion in loans. If you look at it in total, it's $176 billion. It's virtually our defense budget. He has no right to do it. Most of you are against it. It even polls less than 50%. But why is he doing it? Because he's losing to Trump by double figures to young people. In terms of what's he trying to do now? Win over black people. Joe Biden in Detroit, NAACP meeting. Here's what he said. Cut one.
And when I was vice president, things were kind of bad during the pandemic. I'm humbled to receive this organization. It truly inspires me. Saving millions of families, $800,000 in premium, $8,000 a year in premium. We're cracking down on corporate landlords who keep rents down.
Okay. Obviously, huge issues. Obviously, major corrections, correct? So what did some of his mistakes? It's not NAACP. He said NAAC, all right? He said unsurprising instead of inspiring. These are corrections that they made. So I'm not going over this and being overly critical. These are corrections his staff made to a speech they wrote. They're not erectionists. They're insurrectionists. Both are inaccurate, but one's right and one's wrong. He also claimed to be vice president during the pandemic. Joe, sad news, you weren't, so we don't blame you. But number two, for the 2008, you were asked to work with the auto industry, not in last or 2 years ago in 2020. You weren't receiving an award from an organization. You didn't receive an award for an organization. You received an award. So these are just some of the corrections. It's bad. I mean, some of this stuff was incomprehensible. 800, 800,000, 800 million. What are you even talking about? When Trump came out, he said, Donald Trump promises bloodshed. No, he said the election will be a bloodbath. It's a correction. It's a description often used even by you and your party. So Joe Biden scrambled quick to go to New Hampshire, and he gave another speech. So here he's making up other things that don't make up, that don't work out. He tries to be one with the audience by putting himself in the middle of things. If he's talking to Puerto Ricans, he grew up in a Puerto Rican church. He's talking to blacks. At 15 years old, he signed up for the NAACP and stood on a porch with a black family. Nobody knows any record of this. Here he is yesterday in Nashua, New Hampshire. Cut two.
Like my deceased father-in-law, as we say in the Catholic Church, no purgatory for this guy. Five daughters. Straight to heaven. And by the way, I say to every young man thinking of getting married, marrying a family of five or more daughters. I did. My wife's the oldest of five sisters. You know why? One of them will always love you. Not the same one. One of them has always been on your side. That's the biggest advantage of marrying into five daughters.
What the hell does that mean? What are you even talking about? Are you trying to say women are loyal or trying to say you're going to rotate through the sisters? I mean, what does that even mean? It's crazy. It makes no sense. You try to make these relatable stories and you try to act like a folksy Irishman and you make no sense. You say up things like I'm the first one in my family to go to college when you also point out your uncle went to play college football. So Steve Hilton's listening to this and he helped get David Cameron elected. And I think this guy's running for governor in California. Great guy. Contributor here at Fox News. And here's what he thinks. Cut three.
I was watching the longer version of that clip and it just absolute gibberish. You genuinely can't work out what he's trying to say. And of course, it is funny as, you know, when you watch it immediately, you laugh. But it's not funny because this man, this husk of a man who's clearly incapable of doing a job of any kind, let alone the most important job politically in the world, he's supposed to be the leader of our nation. We have massive problems all around the world. We have massive problems here at home. Frankly, many of those problems caused by the fact that he is such a weak leader. He's always been weak politically. Now he's weak physically and mentally.
Yeah, and there's so much at stake. And people have to wonder if it looks like Trump's going to win, what are they going to try to do in the final weeks? And then if you wonder if AI or other these things can manipulate an election, and the rest of the world is better off knowing that America is better off with Joe Biden because we're weak, what are they willing to do? What's Joe Biden willing to do? He's selling off 1 million barrels of reserve gas to offset voter concerns about inflation. Really? So you go ahead and empty the reserves that were put in place in 2014 because we thought we were vulnerable on the East Coast after Hurricane Sandy. And you want to get the price of gas down, which is going up, by draining it again? What you would do if you cared about capitalism in this country and not about your green left is admit that you're drilling more than anybody else. And maybe try to take credit for it, even though he or Barack Obama didn't need credit for it. It was the innovation of the frackers that brought more oil and natural gas to the fray into the world market. And it was their innovation. And then Trump came in and just took the chains off and said, go for it. That's what you should do. You don't make America more vulnerable by cracking into our rainy energy fund. But that's what you're doing. So let's get the oil and gas down by going to the reserves. Let's do something unconstitutional. The Supreme Court said I could. By just forgiving student loans, forgetting about people who are left out in the cold because of this. Keep in mind, yesterday there was a primary. No one's paying attention because we already have our candidates. But 18% of Kentucky voters voted in Democratic primary, voted uncommitted. 18%. They also, if you look overall, these are the pledged uncommitted, people that would not, who have pledged not to vote for Joe Biden. In Michigan, they lost two delegates because of uncommitted. In Minnesota, 11. In Hawaii, 7. In Missouri, 3. And now Kentucky, 3. They're trying to send him a message. What I think is also interesting is while they're trying to send him a message, I think Donald Trump's message should be, talk to Nikki Haley. even if it's 5% in every state, don't lose 5% in every state. Knowing, Mr. President, that if you want to be president again, and you do, that if you lose, not only do you not become president again, you're not going to run again, and you're going to be looking at three more trials if you're lucky to postpone them. You should be looking at zero trials, but you're not. So the situation is, if your people can punt until after January, punt. And then when you get to January, handle it. But if you lose, Joe Biden's going for your jugular, and you're not going to have the money coming from contributions to help you out. So go get Nikki Haley. For President Biden, he can't do it. He's not going to get younger overnight. And even though he's trying to abandon Israel, he's doing the worst possible scenario for him. He's making it seem like he's abandoning pro-Israel people in America, and he's already gone too far backing Israel for the Arab community in America. Not good for him, but this is what he got. This is what he deserves. These are his policies. No one can be blamed for this. He was handled and isolated Iran in the Abraham Accords. He brought Iran in, let them sell their oil to China, released the sanctions that he could, and then tries to get negotiations going with them, at which time he has secret negotiations reignited in Oman 2 weeks ago. But it's going to take some time to flower, so to speak. But whoever believes that China wants to change things? So for the president of the United, former president of the United States, he's going to the Bronx. And guess what? AOC is not happy about it. He's probably going to get a good crowd there. And it bothers her. And if nothing else, it shows guts that he's doing it. Cut 10.
He's hosting a rally to try to con people and try to fleece them out of every dollar that they have to fund his own legal fees. And by the way, he's doing it in the South Bronx, not to make a point, but because he's got court. And the man practically has the legal version of an ankle bracelet around him, and he can't leave the five boroughs because he always has to be in court. And so it is truly an embarrassment to him, and I am looking forward to the response of everyday Bronxites talking about how they feel about him coming to their bed.
All right, first off, AOC, it's not her district. She lives in Queens. But have you ever heard the term Bronxites? I mean, I listen to local news. I've never heard people say Bronxites. Have you? No one. I mean, she totally made that up. And the thing is, it bothers her that he's going to get a bigger crowd than she's got, can get anywhere. Remember, she had that event. The last few events I had, she's been screamed at. So she doesn't want to do it. She's on the other side of President Biden on just about everything. So now President Biden's afraid to pump more oil because of people like her, because he's afraid of his left flank. He's in a tough spot. But I cannot wait to see the results. Now, look, worst comes to worst. If he gets shouted down and there's security concerns, look, I tried it. Going to New York, I'm trying to bring people together. I'm going to try it again later. But not only do I think it'll be a modest, I think it'll be solid tomorrow. I'd love to see it to kind of support and what kind of, I would love it to be a town hall. I would love that more than anything else in a speech. Number two, or he should have a microphone and let people talk on both sides. It's a bit of a risk, but Trump can handle it. John McCain used to. And then he should go to UBS Arena, which you don't know is the new home of the Islanders. Beautiful place right on a major thoroughfare on Long Island, Queens border. Or there's Nassau Coliseum where the Islanders won all their championships. That's right in Nassau County. That's in New York. So he does not want to give up on winning these states that are normally blue and do what Lee Zeldin almost did. So when we come back, I'm going to welcome in Martha McCallum. I see you out there. A lot of calls from New, in fact, all three calls from New York. We'll get one from New Jersey, I should add. We'll be back to take some of those calls with Martha McCallum in just a moment. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade. Fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And when I was vice president, things were kind of bad during the pandemic. I'm humbled to receive this organization. It truly inspires me. Saving millions of families, $800,000 in premium, $8,000 a year in premium. We're cracking down on corporate landlords who keep rents down.
And that is one thing. I hate landlords that keep the rents down, Martha McCallum. The last thing, and then when you go to a cocktail party and everyone's complaining that my rent's so low.
I know.
How many times that happened?
Those corporate landlords.
I always call the corporation. I go, stop shrinking my rent. And we've said that. So they had nine kids. Can you please tell me? I felt, when I woke up to the story, I thought I was looking at a meme when they said that his staff corrected him nine separate times in his speech. And I said, wait, staff? What are you talking? They did. They corrected nine different things from the mispronouncing organizations, awards, and things that you just heard. How unique is that?
Well, I thought it was kind of unique as well. I mean, but you know, they put out an official transcript after a speech like that. So they don't. So your choices
but they
are.
Crossed, they told
no,
you.
I know. The choice is: do you put it out ugly or do you put it out clean for posterity, for people to look at later? So they cleaned it up. But then you wonder, like, gee, is somebody trying to give it to them inside? You know, I mean, it looks terrible. It looks terrible. But they've been given a very difficult choice to either let it go out the way he said it,
right,
or to, you know, fix it, which was really ugly.
And Martha, I thought it was kind of interesting to see he for four straight days, you know, the word is we see these polls and it looks like he's losing black support.
Yeah.
You think that they agree? He's going to the NAACP twice. He goes to black radio
he
on Wednesday.
It the NAAC.
NAAC, which is, you know.
NAAC.
Right. And it's amazing. You think he'd get that down because he signed up to be a member at 15. That was his latest thing at 15. Then he stood on a black family's church to stand so they can keep their house. We have no there's no record of that. But he continues to repeat that story. I mean, he gets off the stage and says this stuff.
Well, you know, it's interesting because they're really going the sort of the old route to try to win over the black vote that he thinks he's losing. And, you know, what we see more and more is just that people of different backgrounds and skin colors want to be treated like everyone else.
I hope so.
They want to be Americans. They want to succeed. You know, you talk to Charles Payne. He's like, what do young men tell you all the time? That they're interested in how do you build generational wealth? Like, how do we do what people before us did? We want to do that. That Morehouse speech was so depressing.
It got me so angry.
So depressing. And it just went back to these sort of relied upon tropes.
You have to work 10 times
exactly.
as hard to make it.
And to say, you know, oh, this is essentially a racist country. It's like, why don't you go in there and inspire people? You can do anything in this country.
You're the leader, and now you're saying every black man gets shot by cops?
Right.
That's the insinuation.
Which is
when you're getting shot in the street.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, there were so many errors in that speech as well, just in terms of some of the facts that he was putting forward. But, you know, I think the message that everybody's looking for to college graduation is something that inspires them, provokes them a little bit, makes them think about the changing dynamics in the country, which, you know, I thought Harrison Butker's speech was fascinating because it got everybody talking. And so those are the two kinds of speeches I think you want to see. Provocative and inspirational.
Yeah, tell me what you think. Don't tell me what's good, what I want to hear that you
Absolutely,
think I think.
That you're recycling.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. Martha McCallum's here. Martha, of course, we think of Memorial Day. We think a lot of your specials and all the great work you did and the books you wrote about World War II. You have a special on Fox Nation?
I do. And I'm really excited about this, Brian, because we spent really, I think it's been about a year and a half since we started working on this. But my idea was that we should have veterans who are still living tell the story of the war, the European theater and then the Pacific theater, through their own voice and their own memories of the progression of the war. So it's not only just, you know, a great document of history, but it's told by the people who are actually there doing these different missions. And we called it The Final Journey because I had a conversation. I had a friend, Tom Rice, who was a wonderful man from California, 101st Airborne, Screaming Eagles, jumped out of a plane, you know, into Normandy on June 6th, 1944. And he was, you know, in his late 90s, and I was talking to his nephew, and he said to us, you know, Tom is on his final journey in this life, and we need to learn everything we can about what he knows and what happened to him. And I thought, it's so true. So we named this series The Final Journey, and it is very moving, and it's an extraordinary document. And we've lost, I think, five of the men who we interviewed have died since then. So when
I was at Fort Liberty yesterday, the woman who was driving me around, Amy, she's from the town, only two towns away from me. She's the first of her family. Now all of her siblings have followed. She's still in her 20s, ROTC. And she said, I'm excited. She goes, after I drop you off, I'm going to France. I go, why are you going to France? Mm. She goes, I'm going to be alone with the general for the next 2.5 weeks in France planning 80 years since D-Day. So this is how intricate the tradition our active army is. They think it's so important that everyone understands what Vietnam was, what Korea was, absolutely, what World War II was. But that's why, so they need a sense of legacy when they're fighting this.
Absolutely. And we'll be there covering the 80th anniversary in Normandy as well. We have a couple of the veterans who are part of this Final Journey project will be with us there. There's nothing like being in Normandy on the anniversary of D-Day. It is incredibly inspiring, and the French people come out from everywhere. The little kids, they understand the story of what we did to liberate Europe, sadly, better than most children in this country.
They say France is over the top. There's American flags everywhere.
Yeah, it is. It's beautiful. Really beautiful.
So we get it when? When is this going to be?
Final Journey has already dropped. It's available on Fox Nation. So the first three episodes are Europe. And the second three episodes, which just dropped 2 days ago, are is the Pacific, which is an extraordinary story.
Just a quick note. I did not know this, but do you know that there was almost no coordination between Japan and Germany? And that, like, even though they were on the same side, there was no coordination. And people that's the difference if we fight again.
Yeah, that's true.
Because France, Russia, North Korea are actually doing exercises in Iran
right
now. So the evil entries on this planet, that'll be the big challenge. So that's good. That's great, especially on Memorial Day. Means something special to everybody, especially our listeners, the most patriotic listeners around.
Absolutely.
Just about the fight that's going on now. We were watching Secretary of State Blinken gets blitzed by the Senate yesterday, and justifiably so. You and I have talked about this. The foreign policy, they're halfway in on Ukraine, the halfway in on Israel, the halfway in on the Abraham Accords, we're halfway in on reapproachment with Iran, which I despise. The statement of condolences with the death of the butcher of Iran.
This is a person who has orchestrated through their terrorist networks the killing of American soldiers all across the Middle East. This is a person who has, hung gay people, hung women for not wearing head covering. It would have been the right statement at the UN if this, ever happens anymore.
They had a moment of silence.
Yeah, they had a moment of silence, but the American representative should have sat in their seat and not participated in this in any way. I know the Pentagon has said that they do not want to hear any moments of silence for President Raisi, but it doesn't feel that way at the UN, that's for sure.
Well, I'll tell you this. I'm sure you know this. Prior to his death, just the week before, there was an announcement, and I believe it was Brett McGurk meeting in Oman with an Iranian representative, not the vice president or president. So here we are, again, trying to talk to this evil regime who has surrounded our number one ally with Hamas, Houthis, and Hezbollah, who are making their life terrible. And we're trying to reapproach them.
And it's quite clear, all of these alliances are so shaky, right? But it's clear that Iran and Russia and China are on the same page, and North Korea. So the move, you would think, would be to really strengthen all of our alliances in Europe, with Israel, with Saudi Arabia, with the United Arab Emirates. All of these areas need to be brought together in a very strong, forceful way that makes it very clear that we stand for democracy and freedom. And you don't hear a lot of messages like that.
Right. So here's H.R. McMaster. I think we both have great respect for him. War College professor. He's with Hoover and he used to be the secretary, the national security advisor to President Trump. Cut 39 on CBS today.
Does Israel have to go into Gaza or into Rafah? Is this a requirement for victory?
Tony, absolutely, because Hamas is still there. Hamas has the guns, and Hamas will just come back. So if you look really at the inclination to want a Palestinian state, to have a Palestinian state that coexists with Israel, who doesn't want that? We want that, right, for the Palestinian people. But the main obstacle to that is Hamas, an organization that took over and has been stayed in power through force since 2005 and doesn't let any kind of opposition emerge. I mean, who's going to be the mayor of Gaza?
Yeah.
Nobody, because they're going to get a bullet in the head from Hamas from day one.
So he's saying, let Israel free the Palestinian people if they are well-meaning from their oppressor. Why are you going halfway? Don't go into Rafah. The other thing is, we found three, or the IDF found three hostage bodies, maybe four, on the outskirts of Rafah. What, alive or dead, they're there. What are you waiting for?
No, it's awful. And we know that Yahya Sinwar is holed up most likely in Rafah, surrounded by his deputies and, according to some reports, surrounded by hostages as well. This is a very hard, you know, I think about this fact. We don't talk about the hostages enough, right? I was out for a run the other morning, went by the synagogue in my town. Pictures of all of the hostages all over the lawn. The menorah is lit 24/7 outside because they want people to remember. Yeah. Do you remember when the hostages were held at the embassy in Tehran? When I was a kid, you would see like the the number of days on the evening news, you know, 364 days, 365 days. It was so present in the mind of every American that we had to bring these people home. And it's an afterthought. I can't even imagine what it's like for these poor families.
Oh, I know. And especially because they were guilty of going to a concert. It's not like they were fighting and they got caught.
No.
So that's it. Or the four women, they put the video out of the four women that were captured and kidnapped and being held hostage now. They were taken out of a military base. I mean, the story on October 7th that Israel has to do on itself to see how they were vulnerable, that's a story. But I also would love to see them get on the same page.
But that doesn't mean they asked for this attack.
Oh, no, I know.
I mean,
but I love to see how the security, you wonder, you know, could they do that in this town with all the illegals that we have here right now, with all the FBI people on the FBI watch list? And then was brought up to me constantly every time I bring that up is that all these outlaw nations that don't even subscribe to our FBI watch list. You think Venezuela says, I got somebody else for your list?
Absolutely.
Do you think that Nicaragua does that? Absolutely not. Do you think Bolivia does that?
Everyone coming across now is Iran, China, Afghanistan. There was almost no Mexicans or Central Americans coming across the border in the past month, according to Bill Malusian and his great sources there. What is going on? I mean, why? What? Why are these people all coming across the southern border? And I mean, it's just it's mind-boggling.
We don't have an answer to why the Chinese are coming.
Exactly.
Do we have an answer? They should be going, if they're coming in, they're crossing, they're kissing the ground, saying, you know how bad it is. If there are a bunch of Uyghurs who are being held in concentration camps,
right.
I'd go, okay.
That would be different.
That would be different. Then I know exactly why you want to leave China. It sucks.
Exactly.
Right? I get it. So you want to be here, but we're not getting that.
No.
So why there's not more curiosity? So that just makes me
say. Because they can is the answer. And then there's, you know, the potentially more nefarious answer, which we don't know.
So the bill that was put together by Lankford and represented from the Biden administration and Senator Murphy is being reintroduced, even though it has no chance. So now suddenly Senator Schumer says, we got to solve this border problem. Alejandro Mayorkas was on with Neil Cavuto yesterday. And here's what he said is the reason why the border is such a mess and what has to be done. Cut 30.
We are seeing the results that take time to take hold. You know, we built capabilities in foreign countries, in Guatemala, in Costa Rica, in Mexico as well. And sometimes they don't develop overnight. They take time to mature. And we continue to take actions within the confines of our authorities. We need Congress to act.
So he's doing a lot. They just haven't taken shape yet, 3.5 years. Do you believe him for a second? Now they're on all hands on deck to say, Senator Lankford, you have a great bill, and now we've got to vote on it when it comes to the border. Senator Schumer does nothing on the border, nothing on illegal immigrants, nothing on the college campuses, nothing on anti-Semitism. They scream outside his office. He does nothing with the power that he's got in New York.
No.
Zero.
That's true.
And now he's got to get this passed because he says the border is a problem.
Yeah, he comes out every year. There's a cancer fundraiser run that I've done a bunch of times over the years. And he comes out and he stands at the starting gate and like high fives everybody as they go by. So he's doing that, I guess. But I mean, look at all the issues that New York is dealing with immigration, with what happened at the universities. And he says nothing on it. It is so you know, people wonder why nothing gets done in Congress, because all it seems that most the thing that everyone cares more about than anything else is just getting reelected and keeping your head down.
So the thing is, too, is when people say over and over again, there's no problem with the border, when they go to have meetings at the border and they don't show up, and then out of nowhere, they say the border's a problem. That's because polls show it's a problem. So Senator James Lankford was asked on CNN why you're not voting for the bill that you co-authored. Cut 27.
It's no longer a bill. Now it's a prop. We spent 4 months sitting down in a bipartisan way to be able to work out what do we think we can actually get passed. Obviously, I was not successful in getting something that could actually get passed. The problem still remains. Everyone knows that this bill is not going to pass, and Senator Schumer is bringing it back up to try to bludgeon people. That's now several months ago. We know it's not going to pass again. Senator Schumer is just bringing this up for a political reason on it. And I've said, hey, Senator Schumer, if you want to actually pass something, let's sit down and actually work this out. But this is not a bipartisan attempt to be able to solve something.
So that's what people should understand. And the only thing, the other thing to, important to bring up, too, is Senator Lankford, absolutely sincere in doing this. But know, too, that the H.R. 2 was handed over to the Senate. If you really wanted to do it, you take that bill, you work with H.R. 2, and you see what you can get done.
Absolutely.
And Trump just called up and said, do not let them go grab this bill and then say they fixed the border. Although there are some things in there that are pretty good. But I would start with Remain in Mexico. The president's in an impossible spot. He said he couldn't do anything. If he does something, it shows he lied. If he doesn't do anything, it shows he refuses to, because we all know he could be doing things.
But, yeah, I mean, there are things that he could do. And if he did them, the numbers would go down. It's fascinating to me when you've seen the action that's been taken on the part of Texas and Arizona. Now everybody's coming through California.
San Diego.
You know, so it's the largest traffic place on the southern border. So, you know, think about that. Texas did everything it could to enforce its own law and to reject people crossing their border. The White House pushed back against it. They sued the state of Texas for trying to protect itself. Remember the razor wire? Remember the trucks lined up all across the border? But what it did, you know, but it worked. And now you don't hear the White House talking about that anymore. They're like, okay, just leave that situation alone. But everyone's in California now. And it's, what are they going to do? I mean, what is the governor, what is Newsom going to do?
You get housing, you get food, and now you get health care. And you go to school. So,
and you can vote in local elections.
Right. Yeah, well, you can. I know in
some places
Northern California.
You can vote in local elections, not in national elections.
Yeah, when we come back, a little bit more with Martha McCallum. She's got her show coming up at 3 o'clock. She'll explain that and so much more. Don't move.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
There is no crime. In fact, I just got almost every review that's been done of the case so far. As they say, there is no crime. This should have never been brought. It should be dismissed before you even have a verdict. But they have a judge that's extremely, let's say complicated, but let's also say conflicted. He's complicated and conflicted. And it's a very strange situation. Nobody's ever seen anything quite like it.
And that is Donald Trump yesterday after court, and Martha McCallum in studio. Her show's going to begin at 3 o'clock. But, Martha, I just wanted to get you to weigh on this before you promo your people. I thought when we left off last week, the judge said, get your closing arguments ready by Tuesday. It's Wednesday. We're not getting it until next Tuesday. What's been the feedback? I know you're covering this stuff virtually live, and you're going through the transcripts on your show. Mm-hmm. What has been the feedback you're getting from the legal experts?
Well, they're behind. They didn't. I think when he calculated that, he was not expecting Cohen to go another day. And now they're backed up because they had defense witnesses as well. We saw Robert Costello. So I also think that he didn't want the closing arguments to happen before the holiday weekend, because then you'd lose so much momentum. I mean, this way they're going to get.
You have a lot. You think it's logical?
I think it is. They're going to get jury instructions, and they'll absorb that. They're going for 7 days in between now and the next time they deliberate. So they have tomorrow to finish jury instructions, which is Thursday, and then they won't be back until after the weekend, which is like just an enormous gulf of time in this kind of process. So, then when they get back, they're going to get the summation and start deliberation.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people think that the judge is trying to tilt everything towards the prosecution. And
he's been very generous to the prosecution and very tough on the defense. There's no, I mean, that's very objective. I don't think there's anyone out there who hasn't interpreted it that way.
Oh, I watch, and you do too, the other channels. They think he's a genius.
Well, they think that he, but they have people like Ellie Honig and others who have said, look, this, and, you know, for Zacharias, that this wouldn't be brought by, this charge wouldn't be happening if it weren't Donald Trump. So there are people who are, I think, are looking at this, but you're right that they say the judge is very polite, very smart, they give him all kinds of kudos.
Right. Bob Costello, I just thought, was too valuable to not use. That's what the former president thought, evidently. The infighting said that they didn't want to put him up. And the president said, you got to put him up. What are you going to be doing?
I anticipated that was exactly what was going to happen. When I saw Bob Costello all over TV shows, I thought to myself, former President Trump is going to see this guy and say, why are you not putting him on? He's a great defender for me. It was a little dicey in there when he was on. He got into it with the judge as well. And there was some indications that the jury was like a little uncomfortable and looking at each other about, you know, we don't know how they perceived him. So we'll see.
Who's on your show?
So I'm going to talk to Jack Keane, who you were just down at Fort Liberty with, and we'll ask him about three countries that are joining in calling the Palestinian territory a state, and also what's happening with Israel. You know, it's amazing that they're now doing these deliveries on this pier area off of Gaza.
$330 million.
But they're not getting in. That the food is getting stolen, according to a lot of reports, as soon as it crosses over.
Unless we're going to escort it.
Obviously, there's a lot to talk. Exactly. There's a lot to talk to him about. We'll start to Kevin O'Leary about the president's enormous new student loan debt plan and how many billions we're racking up and giving people back their money.
Do you have any loans that I could forgive for you?
I think I'm good.
You're good?
Yes. Okay, good. I pay my bills
on
time.
Do you have any loans that I could forgive? Eric's no. Okay, they're shaking me off.
Would it be like all you would do is say, I forgive you, and then I wouldn't have to pay it? Because I could come up with some.
Good.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick, the show, as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform. And watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.